This week on the Boag World Show, we argue about the best design tool and explore the best ways to launch that side project that you've been dreaming about. This episode of the Boag World Show is sponsored by Balsamic and LinkedIn Jobs. Hello and welcome to the Boag World Show. This season of the show is a series of virtual meetups of web professionals recorded live and attended supposedly by drop-in guests. However, because they're drop-in guests, we have no idea what's going to happen from one show to the next. The only consistency in the show is my co-host Marcus Lillington. Hello, Marcus.
Hello, Paul Boag. I guess, yes, I've been consistent for, how long have I been? 15 years now.
Since 2005 we started doing
15
this.
15 years. I was just a small boy back in those days.
I know, right? Well, no, you weren't.
I was. I was a small boy in shorts and a little tie pulled down a bit.
Hello, I'm Marcus Lillington.
If you go back to the start, that's what that my voice is sound? Like. Yeah, yeah.
All right, Paul, absolutely.
You coming out to play today?
To be honest, I don't think we're a lot different from that even now, basically. And this is the thing about men, is that I don't think men ever grow up. I just think they get better at hiding the fact that they're children.
That's true. However, that I don't think it applies to all men. Because some men do have horrible hardship and have to grow up in. That's what we mean, isn't it?
Okay.
Yeah. But generally speaking, I think you are absolutely right. And I also think there's a thing where we all have a particular age that we stopped at.
Yeah.
In our heads. Mine's 18. I am 18. Mm. And I get such a shock every time I look in the mirror.
Yeah, well, mine's probably a bit older than that. Yeah. I know what you mean.
And some people might have stopped at 12, you know. Yeah. They are still in their shorts and climbing trees, you know.
Yeah.
But I'm just on this constant night out getting drunk in my head. It's fantastic, really.
So, yeah, except your body doesn't respond as well in the morning anymore, does it?
No, it certainly doesn't.
So, yes, what? you can tell that I'm... really still a kid at heart, because in the show notes I wrote as the thing that I wanted to talk about in the introduction that my wrist was aching.
That made you laugh, didn't it?
I know because immediately your brain goes childish, doesn't it, which no adult would do. But there is actually legitimate reasons for my wrist
Just talk about your injury. No, that doesn't work either. Is it the old when you got smashed the champagne bottle into it?
No,
sounds really rock and roll, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah, my devastating scar from
after he threw the TV out of the hotel room window. Yeah. He then smashed a bottle of champagne over his wrist.
No, I tell you what I normally tell people is I got bottled by an old lady. I always think that sounds like a good story. And it's actually strictly true from what did happen that severed the tendon in my thumb. No, although it is kind of related to that. So you know that I've got the book coming out at encouragingclicks.com.
Is this because you've had to sign so many of them?
Yeah,
it is, isn't
right?
it?
Vitaly has sent me 500 postcards. 500 postcards that I've got to sign, right? And to be fair, he said, would you mind signing them? And I thought, yeah, that's not too bad. I can spread it over a few days. It'd be fine, right? I get them through the post, okay? And there was a lot more than I thought for a start. Mm-hmm. And then he adds, oh, can you put a little greeting to each person? Okay, so now I've got to write something. Not just my name. I've got to write something on it.
You've written thanks for being awesome on there. Oh, Paul.
On the okay. All right, fair enough. I recognise that is cheesy. But here's the thing. Then he says, oh, try and make them all different.
All different? What?
Right.
That's impossible.
And make them all personal. So, to be honest, the fact that 300 cards in, I'm writing things like thanks for being awesome. It's flipping understandable.
You are talking to a man that spent 7 hours signing records once in a queue.
Did you really?
Yeah. It wasn't always bad because I did get to sign people, and I'm giving you no more than that. Yes, but I remember we had a signing at a water park on the west coast of America.
Where people weren't wearing a huge amount.
Correct. And they didn't have any records to, because this is the days when people bought vinyl.
Right.
They do again, but this was before it went out, out of fashion. And they didn't have any vinyl, so they just said, can you sign me here?
So did people that do that, have you ever had anyone go away and then get that tattooed? Because that's the thing these days, isn't it? You get someone to sign you and then you get it turned into a tattoo.
Yes, obviously.
You've no idea.
I've got a clue. No.
But it's like whatever story I tell, you always can one-up me, Marcus. And interestingly, it's all when you were about 18, going back to that.
That would have been when I was, yes, it was. 18, 19, 20, that sort of age.
Yeah.
No, actually, it was more like 21, actually, 21, 22, a bit older.
There you go.
Hey-ho.
Actually, that's a really good comment in the chat room. Andy's just said that I should outsource my postcards to Mr. Bingo. Have you ever come across Mr. Bingo?
No.
He is quite
nothing to me.
He's quite a character. I met him I'll try and put a show note link to his show notes. I was speaking at the awards conference, which ironically I'm speaking at next week or the week after.
What the awards
conference? Yeah. And he was speaking there, and it's the first time I've ever come across the guy. He's an artist, right?
Okay.
But he does really kind of all kinds of fun, weird art projects. He's a proper artist, you know. But he also, obviously being an artist, most artists are rubbish at making money. Not Mr. Bingo. He's got some very clever ideas. And one of his many ideas that he does is every now and again he opens it up so that you can pay him money to send a postcard to one of your friends, right?
Right.
And the postcard will be individually drawn. And it's shitty, you know, quick scribble. And they're normally deeply insulting. Right. So he tells people to F off and calls them the C word and, you know, all these kinds of things. And you can pay him quite a lot of money to send you a card to insult one of your friends, which I just think is genius. The other really good one he did, which is on a similar kind of vein, was he did an advent calendar, right? Which was a scene of a load of people, you know, different people. And you could scratch off their clothes on this advent calendar. It was an illustration. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't pornographic. Well, it was. I guess it was in the fact that they then were naked. But it was, you know, a line drawing. It was nothing too obscene. And you would scratch off their clothes for each day of the Christmas period. He's a very, very fun guy. Definitely worth following. Absolute character.
Described on... not on my search engine as Mr. Bingo, artist, speaker, and TWAT, because I can't say that word on the podcast.
Yes, that's pretty much it. So there we go. He's someone that we could have had on the show because. So I asked before we started recording, who's going to come on the show today? Absolutely nobody was.
I suspect the listener knows this by the amount of waffle that we've managed to get through so far. I've got loads more in me today.
Oh, is it one of those days? So this is people's own fault. If they're not willing to come onto the show,
they get to listen to me.
They get to listen to our pointless crap. So the idea of this season, and it's been going very well so far, is that, you know, people come along, they drop into the chat room, and then they volunteer to come on the show and have a little chat, right? But people have been absolutely useless this week and are not willing to do it. But if you're listening to this and you fancy coming on the show and you really don't need to have anything particular to say, the whole idea is we'll create like a meetup environment and we're all just chatting. So just saying hello and who are you and what you do. If you fancy doing that and you're at home, just go to subscribe.boagworld.com/community Sign up there and you'll get notifications before each show goes live, you know, before we record each show, so you can come on and you can just join in. Now, Gareth in the chat room is currently complaining that 3 p.m. on a Thursday is peak burnout time, and so that's why people aren't willing to come on the show. Fair enough, then. I'm going to call your bluff, Gareth. We are going to be mixing up the times every week from now on. There's going to be a whole variety of different times. So that means, Gareth, you have to come on the show at some point, because one of those times will not fall in your burnout time. So you've backed yourself into a corner there, mate. I just thought you'd like to know. So, yes, if there is anybody in the chat room that came in late and is willing to come on, you will absolutely save us, because I get distracted by the chat room.
I'm currently trying to nag Lee to come in.
Oh, okay. Oh, excellent. Good. Because otherwise we are absolutely stuffed if he doesn't turn up, aren't we? So, what have you been working on, Marcus? You been doing anything interesting that is worth telling the listeners about?
Yes. I'm going to give you a bit of user experience. I think the only thing that is worth kind of talking about, I suppose, is the fact that we've had a bit of a tricky situation with a client, which I was going to talk about last week. And it was actually because so did you. I'll just sort of talk about maybe what we've learned from that. I mean, occasionally you do. It's just the way we don't always get things right. I guess it's hard to admit. I know, but it's true. And I think there's a natural reaction to kind of defend ourselves and say, well, you didn't do X, or you weren't clear on Y, but which nearly is always true. That is the case. But I guess in the end, I'd argue that it's our responsibility as the hired expert to keep on questioning and probing and trying to find ways to a solution, rather than in some cases just kind of crossing our fingers and hoping for the best. And in this particular project, there was two aspects to it, and one aspect of it we were very, very pushy over and over. You know, we need to know what the deliverable is, and what are we going to be doing here? Are we going to be working with guess who's arrived?
Hey, it's Lee. Hello, Lee.
I'll come back to that thought, because Lee's here. Sit down and you can ask him questions about who he is and where he works and what he does and stuff like that.
He can sit there for a minute.
You've got to stay there while I finish off my thought.
It's worth finishing that train of thought, because I think that's quite interesting, dealing with clients when it's problematic. Yeah. So what? How did you resolve it?
I'll come on to how we resolved it, because I'm not absolutely sure that we have 100% yet, but we're getting there. But we've been a bit guilty of the other aspect of this project of kind of, crossing fingers and hoping for the best. But we're now trying to find a way forward, which I think we have, which is great. And as I've just said, a few alarm bells went off at the start of the project, and we dealt with some of them, but not all of them. But I guess as I was kind of writing thoughts about this, the fact that we are dealing with them means they were just a bit later. So that's good.
And I think, it's the relationship, all right.
Yes, and it is. And I think one of the issues is that people can often appear kind of difficult or maybe unengaged, or our biggest worry on this occasion was that they were at odds with each other. Turns out they're not, but it seemed that that might have been the case. And I'm really guilty of this, is that if they're not super happy, bouncy people who are, really excited about everything, then we often think that something's wrong or broken. And I think what we've learned here is just that some people are different, the way they approach things isn't maybe the way that we look at the world, but that doesn't mean to say we can't find a way forward. And what we've done here, and what they've done, which is great, we've both been super honest with each other, and that's the way forward. And through this process of being super honest, we both kind of said, look, if we can't find a way forward, then we should just go, thanks, it's been great, but it didn't work out. And on this particular case, we have found a way forward, which is great, but we both realise that there's no point banging your head against the wall if there isn't one.
So no.
That was it, really.
What I take away from that in particular is the fact having the right fit between supplier and contractor is really important. That if some people just don't work well with one another because they've got very different approaches and very different ways of doing things. And, you know, if that's the case, it's okay to say, look, this isn't really working, you know. And I've given clients the opt-out before where I've felt like they've not been really happy with the way I'm doing things. And I've said, look, it's fine. If you want to go, I'm not going to keep, you know, tie you to this contract if you don't feel it's working. Yeah. It doesn't happen very often, but it can happen.
It doesn't on this guy. I just think we just had to, it's that those two words, super honest, is what it comes back to.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree.
And the one that I started this off with is that point that I think it's our responsibility as the supplier to kind of find a way.
And that's where I messed up recently. You mentioned earlier that I had a client that was unhappy, and I did. And for some reason, they caught me in the wrong frame of mind, and I went in very defensive. And you're right, I shouldn't have done that. You know, it's not the way you do things, and ultimately it's our job as a supplier to keep them happy and make them pleased with, you know, where they're going. Even if it is justifiably arguable that it's as much their fault as it is yours, you know, you've got to be the bigger man, as whatever the stupid phrase is.
You're great at that, Paul, aren't you?
I'm better than I used to be, but yeah, I'm not great, as well you know. So, have we got Lee in with us? Can he hear us?
No, he can't. I'm going to give him the headphones.
Oh, right. Lee, you smell of raspberries. I don't know. That was
smell of raspberries.
That was the worst insult ever. I panicked. Hello, Lee. How you doing?
I'm all right, thank you. No idea what you were just talking about, but I'm sure it was interesting.
It was fascinating.
I think I can guess partly what it was.
Difficult clients was the conversation.
How'd you do this? Because you're hiding behind the mic shield.
Don't worry about the picture.
Is this
it's
live?
Better than
the,
yeah. There's lots of people in here. Oh, did you not know that?
I wasn't entirely sure, but I can see the chat.
Yes.
Hello.
So, good to have you in, Lee. So how have you been? What have you been working on recently? Anything exciting? This is where you go, no.
loads of things. The project Marcus was just talking about.
Oh, right.
And trying to design a very sort of component-based system and pages in Figma. I've just been trying to persuade Ed to use Figma. He's been a staunch Photoshop user forever.
Oh, he has, yeah.
And he's never tried anything, never tried Sketch. He doesn't like anything new, but suddenly he's been prepared to look into Figma.
Ooh.
So I think I may have been selling its advantages.
So why have you settled on Figma compared to, you know, compared to Sketch or InDesign or whatever else?
Well, I was using Sketch, but then I moved to PC. Unwilling to be carrying around a $3,000-$4,000 machine in my bag anymore because of the ridiculous price of a new machine I wanted, I decided I'm going to go back to PC because I've always always been pretty kind of I don't really care which operating system I'm using because using Adobe stuff really make a great deal of difference.
That's
mostly what I used, but I also use a lot of audio software on PC.
Yeah.
So I decided to just stick in one system. Oh, and Steam on PC. That was a big reason as well.
I can't believe it. So basically, you swapped your work machine for gaming.
I had to finish Tomb Raider with a decent graphics card. My Mac couldn't even run it. Two frames a second.
Yeah.
I think if you spend $20,000 now on a Mac, you can get a decent graphics card, can't you?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, an external one, a big box that sits next to you. Yeah.
But yeah, that was just one deciding factor in, all different factors of which machine to think. Yeah, my PC, my laptop is best build compared to a nice MacBook. But anyway, yeah, so Sketch isn't available on the PC.
Yes. Fair enough.
So that's how I ended up at Figma. But then the world, I noticed, seemed to be quite in favour of Figma.
Yeah, Figma's very in at the moment, isn't it, as a potential tool?
And pretty much it's ripped off everything Sketch does, I don't know how it's been around. Tandem both developed, but it seemed to do the same as Sketch and more. A lot of the sharing stuff seemed better. Opponent use is pretty good, but yeah, that's the main reason. Couldn't use Sketch.
Yeah, I had a little play with it. So I had a project a while back where I had to build a design system for a client, and very specifically the design system, the design tool that I was creating the design system in, the components had to be responsive within the design system, within the design package itself. So you wanted to be able to resize them. So I looked at Sketch, I looked at InDesign, and I looked at Figma. And actually, interestingly, only InDesign could do a decent job at it at the time. I mean, whether things have changed or not. Because of the way components worked within it, but Figma came, in my opinion, came out better than Sketch did in that particular category. So it's really quite interesting, because it's like all these things, isn't it? It's not right or wrong answer. It all comes down to personal preference at the end, isn't it?
Well, me and Ed were just discussing, why has no package ever let you do a list of things properly? You know, in the same way that HTML does a bulleted list.
Yeah.
We have to simulate bulleted lists still. Different paragraphs, indent them, always got to wrap around. So why? I mean, Figma knows all about the CSS for the gradient, but no one still seems to be able to manage to do a bulleted list. Hey, Word can. WordPad can. Why? Yeah, most things can do bulleted lists if they're dealing with text, but graphic packages which deal with text, no.
It's so weird. You know, Figma, and go on.
Figma now can do the thing. It knows about flow. So if you can set up your page, so if you insert lots of paragraphs, it will all move down. You know, proper page flow, like a web page.
Which is good. Yeah.
Rather than, I've got to now move all those things manually down the page.
Yes. But Sketch now does that as well. But InDesign,
really?
Yeah, but InDesign doesn't.
Right.
So it's like just so close. All these things are so close. You just want to take them all and bunch them together. We're getting, but I mean, compared to what we were like, you know, designing in 10 years ago, we're really spoilt for choice now, aren't we?
Oh, definitely, definitely. Things have got a lot better, but I live in hope that one day this kind of integrated knowing about web things in a graphics package will happen, and it will be beautifully sort of. We'll probably move to something else by then, completely.
Yeah. And of course, this is really an argument for designing in the browser.
Yeah, and I still go back and forward between the two. That's sometimes. Sometimes it's fast browser. Sometimes we try to come up with crazy new ideas. Because I do find designing in the browser just leads me down the same path over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
You can't. The thought of doing anything mad when you've set something up, you'd have to go back to square one and everything break. It's easier to experiment in a graphic package. It's easier to do linear kind of components. Reads of things in the browser, so it's this sort of the two sides of the design problem. On this particular project, I've been flipping. I've designed in the browser, then I've gone back to Figma. I thought, oh no, this will be easier in the browser. Gone into the browser, think, oh no, this will be easier in Figma. that kind of toing and froing just drive me a little mad.
Yeah.
Please, please, both of these angles come together into one solution soon.
But you are right. I mean, in the earlier parts of the design process, I do tend to prefer graphics packages. And then the kind of later you get into the process, that's the point where you start refining it more, and you start, and that's where I think it's better in the browser personally. But it depends on yourself. Your own.
It also depends how good you are at code CSS.
Yeah.
If you're working within your limitations, you're staying safe, and you're restraining what you can do.
Yeah.
Whereas in graphics, you don't have those trains. I'm going to shove this over the top of that. That would probably take me 2 hours to get positioning properly in the browser, and I can do it within minutes. Oh, and now I've done it, I don't like it. So, you know, you have to take the two approaches still. Ooh, people are saying.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, somebody's mentioning Tailwind CSS, which I've not come across. Ooh. No. For rapidly building custom designs. Oh, I've never come across that. I'll have to have a look, see what it is afterwards.
That's actually a CSS library.
Class-based styling. Oh, so you can eat quickly style up things just using a load of... Yeah, so Linux good for library. Prototyping then.
Come to Linux. I do love the idea of being open source. Yeah, but no. Audio software doesn't work very well on Linux. There's no native instrument plugins on Linux. So that's it.
I was quite shocked because my son works on Linux for his computer science degree, and we were mucking up a website, and we were just popping in a video, you know, HTML video tag. That was pulling in a video that had been working fine on every other system, but didn't work on his installation of Linux for some reason, whether they didn't have the right coding or whatever. So I don't know. It all seems a bit hippie-ish to me.
Every time
honest.
I've tried Linux, I end up sat in the command line, typing in things I don't understand, trying to get random drivers working, and
thinking,
what am I doing? What's happened? It's so easy. On the other platforms, this sort of detachment, and you know, these obscure bits of code going in, pull down libraries and dependencies, and
You've had an offer of free lifetime technical support from Gareth in the chat room. And that's Gareth Thomas, if you wish to Google him. He's offering free Linux support for the entire Boag World community. So there you go.
Can you port native
I'm ungoogleable. Very wise decision there, Gareth. What did you get in terms of the last question before I let you go? Because I know you do actually have work to do. But I'm just interested in what PC you got did you get something cool like a Microsoft Surface or anything like that?
I do have a Surface I'm using as well. But no, I went to PC Specialist and I put together a big lump of metal which I can pull things in and out of. It's
noisy.
It is noisy. I now can call that Pro Mode. Apple are introducing Pro Mode, where your fan might come on now. Soon. Look forward to that.
Oh, yes, I've heard about that.
So they stop thermal throttling you and will actually let the CPU do more. But yeah, my fan goes off a lot. I don't mind that. I've usually got headphones on, so Marcus always likes to point it out. What's that noise?
Oh, the sea's coming through the window.
I can throttle it down, so but you know. I don't want to.
Oh, fair enough.
Why have six cores if you can't use them all?
I completely understand.
So no, PC Specialist let you kind of tailor tailor things together. And the first day I got that machine, I took the screws off the back and put things in and out of it. And it was like, wow, I've never, ever taken my MacBooks apart. Didn't dare. It's like, you know.
That's a good thing. Please.
You are such.
I like taking things apart.
I'm not sure that's going to end well, but there you go. Okay, Lee, thank you very much for coming and joining us and having a chat. You need to come back on future episodes whenever the chat room is too coward to come in themselves. But for now, thank you very much, mate. I much appreciate
it. Good to talk to you. Bye.
Right, so while Lee hands back to Marcus, which I'm sure he's about to do, I will just do a quick sponsor, if I may. So we're going to just talk quickly about LinkedIn Jobs, who are a really great sponsor. And if you are looking to hire, I really recommend that you check out LinkedIn Jobs. So hiring the right people in our industry as your business grows really sucks. It's one of the hardest things that we have to do. It's incredibly time consuming and it's extremely expensive. So, and let's be honest, nobody likes dealing with recruitment agencies anyway. But it doesn't need to be that way if you use a service like LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs screens candidates for all the kind of hard and soft skills that you're looking for, so you can find the right person fast. So you can screen people for things like their ability to collaborate, their creativity, their adaptability. So it looks beyond just their work skills and puts a job post in front of the right kinds of candidates to match your business requirements perfectly. So that's how LinkedIn makes sure that your job post is seen by the people that you actually want to hire, people with the right skills, the qualifications and other interests to help you grow your business. And it's no wonder that people are hired every 8 seconds with LinkedIn, and why the company is rated, or LinkedIn Jobs is the number one hiring platform for delivering quality hires. Find the right person for your business today with LinkedIn Jobs. You can pay what you want and you'll get the first $50 off. Just visit linkedin.com/BoagWorld. Again, that's linkedin.com/BoagWorld to get $50 off your first post. Terms and conditions apply. Right. Okay. So, Ben has volunteered to come on the show. Is Ben still with us? Is he? He managed to stay even if Imut's got kicked off. Let's have a look. Where is he? Ben.
I think he's still here.
I've just sent you an invitation, Ben, and we'll get you on the show. Find out what's happening in your life. I don't think... Have we spoken to Ben before?
Yes is the obvious answer here. Yeah, loads of times.
Let's play safe.
Different Ben, obviously. Yeah,
exactly. I like the way you covered yourself there. That's very good. So, hello, Ben. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. How are you guys?
Hello, Ben.
Very good indeed. It's good to have you on the show. So, tell everybody a little bit about yourself. What do you do? Where do you work, etc.?
Cool. I work at a company called Venture Harbor, a small little business. We do digital, it's a digital innovation studio, and that could mean many things. Essentially, it allows us to build anything. And we're in a really nice position where we can just bootstrap ideas and stuff. So we've built affiliate websites around brokers and marketing automation things. We've got a really cool marketing blog. We've got SaaS products on lead form, generate lead forms and things like that. And we've recently built a macOS app for productivity, essentially, to help you block distractions. So that's quite cool. So we've got a whole load of things. And I do the producty design sort of side of things. And I live down in Exeter. I work remotely from Exeter. So, yeah, I've been doing this for 3 years. I've enjoyed it.
So, although I should clarify that although we haven't had Ben on the show before, I actually know Ben. Because me and Ben have worked together a little bit, and I've been doing some mentorship-y, supporty stuff, especially of this Mac productivity app, because you know what a sucker I am for things like that, Marcus.
Well recognized of him as well.
Universally known to be a sucker for such things. Ooh, shiny software. So I've been having to play with that, it's very cool, actually. I really like the premise of it. So the premise is that you can kind of basically block distractions, notifications, websites that you shouldn't be using, that kind of stuff. I love that, I mean what I still don't fully understand about Venture Harbor is you seem to be kind of living the dream, really, because you just we kind of make what we want. And how do you make any money? Where does the money come from, Ben?
The founder, the boss.
He's a millionaire.
Oh, that would be convenient if that was the case, but it's not. Marcus, who's the founder, he set up a blog many years ago, and he's invested in that SEO-wise and content-wise, and it's definitely helped. And he's taken some, he worked a lot in marketing beforehand, And he found some pains and struggles that his clients were having, and he started building solutions for those pains. And one of them was this broker site, comparison site, and another one was this lead formula site, and they've all been very profitable, right. And they continue to be, and they've created a kind of nice foundation for us to say, and our motto at Venture Hub is that we build a product or a venture one every year. And so last year was three. We've been building that, and this year we're trying to come out with some ideas, but continuing to build the other apps as well. So maintain the other apps. That is, yeah. So it is a really, really cool situation, very unique, and I've never worked anywhere like this
before. Yeah, how did you land this job? It seems like the perfect job where you just get to play with what you want.
Oh, I wish it was. I say it's play. It's a ton of work because I'm.
Yeah. You're not convincing anyone.
It was an interesting one. I 3 years ago, Marcus reached out to me, on LinkedIn. Funny enough, and you know, we had similar interests, and I love design. I was a head of design at Crowdcube, a small kind of startup company back then, he just caught my imagination a bit, and I said no at the time, and then a year later he came back. I reached out to him. I said, now's the time.
Right.
And then we went from there, and we were a really good fit, and the culture wise and where the business was going, I was fully on board, and it was just exciting. There was so much potential.
So it sounds like at the moment you're at that point where you're experimenting with or trying to work out what your next venture is going to be.
Yeah.
How do you do that? What's your process? Do you have a process, or is it, you know, just kind of pull ideas out of your backside?
There is a lot of pulling ideas out the backside. And that's fine. But we're really in touch with our customers, who use our software and things. And we do have a niche. You know, we work a lot in marketing. Our target audience around the apps and tools that we currently have are entrepreneurs, small business kind of people.
Yeah.
And so when you have that constant communication and involvement with those people, you start to hear issues people are having, problems, and you start, you know, playing around with ideas. How can we solve that? Oh, funny enough, they're having the same problems as we are. How are we going to solve that? And so that's where the ball starts rolling, and we start experimenting, prototyping, throwing ideas out there. And then we think, can we monetize it? Because no, we don't build anything unless it's a business. You know, it can be profitable. It needs to be profitable in a certain period of time. Yeah. So it's good.
So once you've got, you come up with a handful of ideas, how do you work out which ones have got the most legs? You know, you say you do. Do you prototype a number of different solutions, and if so, how do you test them? What's the kind of methodology there?
We wouldn't go as far as to prototype everything. We would narrow it down to a couple, and start throwing some feelers out there with the people we know, with the communities we know, and start seeing the interest and the potential for, you know. Again, monetization is there value for the end user, and how could this grow? What is the potential? What is the market for the idea? And it's all based on those. It's multiple factors. You know, how big is the market? How much investment will it require? How much development time? So many things that go into it, and then we find, okay, this looks viable. How quickly can we build that? You know, can we get it done in 2 months' time? To get the idea out there. So that it's really tiring. It's an absolutely exhausting process.
I can imagine.
It's constant. And it's always another pretty big deadline. And it's exciting and interesting and massive learning, because I'm learning something every week. So it's really cool. Yeah.
Good. There's so many things that you just said there that I think are lessons that others could do with learning, right? Well, obviously I'm working with you, but I mentor a lot of different people. One of the reoccurring things that I come across when I come across agencies that decide to build a side project, is often what it is.
Sounds familiar.
Yes, I know. This is why I know what's wrong, because we cocked up in this field ourselves.
What we would like to do is to have a piece of software that we can earn some money from. Oh, yes. That's not the right place to start, is it?
Yeah, everybody just goes into it with the wrong attitude. And the number of times people go, I've got this great idea, I've started building it, yeah. Right? Is where the conversation begins. And it's like, no. That don't build it. Don't invest time in building this thing until you know there's a market there. Do you know how you're going to monetize it? Yeah. All of those kinds of things. So hearing you say that is really good. And the other thing that you do really well is you push something to market very quickly. Mm. So you don't build a complete, polished, perfect product before you put it into the world. And I think that's another really good point as well.
It's a hard balance to find for me, to know when that point is. And that's something I'm learning a lot about in the last 6 months. Is like, when do we push this next piece out? Because experience is such a big, you want a the idea of MVP, minimal viable product. And there's all these new terms, minimal lovable product. And, what is it? But there is a piece there. There's the lovable, which is really key now, I think, that especially, I think, for it's a macOS product. And there's an expectation with macOS users to have something which is a bit more polished. So it's a really interesting process. And to getting that balance right, of like, just want it to work and get out the door and get feedback, but you want it to be a nice experience as well. So it's like, time and investment.
Chris was really moaning about you this morning, Paul.
What have I done?
You recommended a product that basically, well, this doesn't work, and this doesn't work, and this doesn't work. And it's like, just because it looks nice doesn't mean to say it's ready for market.
What product was it?
I can't remember the name of it. It was a survey tool. So he's gone back to
a Typeform.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, dear. He's just painful, that man.
No, but to be fair, he's right on this one. It doesn't, you can't create questions where you can have a range between, like, do you think, how much do you like this thing? 1 to 10. It's not available. They haven't built it yet. And it's like, yeah, okay, fair enough. I think maybe you're right on this one. You can only have 10 questions as well. It's like, well, hang on.
Yeah, but that's because he's being tight and don't want to pay his blooming money for it. Tight ass. Right. Anyway. Going back to the minimal viable product thing, one of the things you said there, which I think is really interesting, is that a mistake that people make with minimal viable product is that you've still got to have the quality experience, right? So one of the things that, if we go back to Serene and what you did with that, is your minimal viable product there was beautiful. It was a lovely, nice experience out of the gate, but it didn't necessarily have as many features as it could be. And that's so important. It's this idea, minimal viable product doesn't mean, oh, just everything works, but it's kind of a bit shitty. And so many people still don't seem to get that.
Yeah, it's a really, really tough one. There's like, you got to, what are the core features? And I think we go back to the vision of what we as a business want to achieve. We want to achieve, allow people to not be distracted and achieve big goals, and actually do the set of features that we currently have tick those boxes. And I think, yes, we've been able to do that. We use it internally, and we think, yes, we can use it. And we have a batch of 300 people that are using it, and they're giving us good enough positive feedback that we think, let's push it out and then take it to the next step. It's a gut feel. We're trying to work out now what's our product market fit, this elusive thing, what is the product market fit? So is anyone going to pay for it? Is that, so we're trying to figure that out at the moment. And it's tough because you're investing money in this idea. When do you stop? There's got to be a can't invest any more in this.
One of the things that I recommended recently to one of my clients, which worked quite well, was they had an idea. In their case, it was for a course that they wanted to create. And I said to them, well, look, don't spend any time on the course at all, right? Work out what your curriculum is, what it's going to cover, what it's going to do, etc. But then just build a landing page for it, right? Proper landing page with a buy button, the whole works, absolutely everything to do with, you know, to sell it. And then basically push it out to people. And then if people click on that buy button, you know that they would be willing to spend real hard cash. And at that point, you just give them a message saying, we're not quite ready to launch. Give us your email address and we'll let you know.
Yeah.
And just doing something like that, I think makes an enormous difference to know whether your market is viable or not. Have you ever done anything like that?
Well, with Serene, we did something similar. We set up a waiting list.
Yeah.
And that started pushing that on that front. And that worked really well. But it's for of course, it's different. But I thought for Serene, there's an appetite for the concept.
Yes.
Are they willing to pay is a separate question. It's almost like saying,
it is.
Will you pay $5 for this before they've tried it? And it's like, oh, yeah. But when it comes to crunch, you know, no, I'm not too sure. And we're getting some interesting data on that.
Yeah. I guess that's where something like a Kickstarter campaign or something along those lines is a good idea as well. Because that effectively, you know, if someone's willing to pay money up front for something that they haven't yet got for a big discount, admittedly, but you get a much more realistic idea of what's going on. So it's an interesting one. Ben, thank you so much for coming on. I'm sorry about the interruption partway through when my connection dropped, but it was lovely to have you on the show. Come back in another week and we'll talk about I feel like there's a lot more we can unpack there, so we'll definitely get you back in again if you're up for it.
Yeah, definitely. This has been great. Thank you very much.
Awesome.
Good to meet you, Ben.
Excellent. So talking of projects and things, you know, maybe a side project you've got or something you're trying to build, one of the things that we said there is one of the key aspects of it is marketing, is getting the word out about that product. And that actually brings us quite well onto our next sponsor, which is Balsamiq. I had the weirdest conversation. We talked about this, didn't we? We had him on the podcast a couple of weeks ago. Do you remember?
Yep, that's right. This has got nothing to do with balsamic, has it?
Yeah, there's nothing to do with balsamic at all, right? So they decided to do something very strange, which is that they bought a load of sponsor slots for the podcast and they want them to donate them to you. So if you've got a project, right, that that you would like to promote, maybe it's, you know, the Serene app, for example, or it might be a course that you're running, or it might be a blog that you've got. It doesn't really matter, as long as it kind of reinforces the kind of values that Balsamiq stand for, which is things like making it accessible, making it usable, you know, quality kind of user experience stuff, then they're happy to give you a slot, right? So if you'd like me to be promoting your product or service for absolutely free, because Balsamiq have already paid for it, go to balsamiq.com/go/BoagWorld and fill out the application form, right? And I will read your ad on one of our episodes. Now, there are only a few slots available, so act fast. But here's the thing, right? You'll go, oh, yeah, they'll get so many through that I won't bother, right? I've been tweeting this for a week and they haven't. Everybody goes, oh, no, it's not worth doing because there'll be so many, right? Bullshit. Put it in. It's worth it because you've got a good chance of getting a free slot on the show. When you go to that page of balsamiq.com/go/BoagWorld, you can also get, there's almost a promo code that you can use if you fancy giving Balsamiq a try. But don't buy it because they don't want any more customers, apparently. Weirdos. I'm not convinced. I think it's a clever marketing ploy. That's what I think.
They're taking over the world, aren't they? That's what it is.
Yeah, I think it's insidious. I think they're evil, really.
This is the darkest of the dark patterns.
Yeah, being nice. Damn them. So actually, that turned out all right in the end. Once we really great, always pleasure to chat with Lee, and I always end up talking about which piece of software is the coolest. That is like our go-to conversation with Lee. He has played with every piece of software on the planet, so that's always a really interesting one. And then to talk a little bit about kind of minimal viable products and launching your side projects and that kind of stuff. Really good stuff. Marcus, do you have a joke for us?
Oh, I do. Yes, this is one from Paul Edwards, who's not with us. He's gone on holiday, hasn't he? I know this because of the Slack channel.
Yes.
Right. What do you call a herd of sheep tumbling down a hill?
You know this is just going to set Chris off, because Chris always associates this podcast with sheep for some reason. What do you call a herd of sheep tumbling down a hill?
A lambslide.
Oh, that is so bad.
I think that's wonderful.
That is just so bad. There we go. So, exactly.
Says Gareth.
I can't even remember why the whole sheep thing came about, but it's
Don't bring it back up. Don't bring it up.
It's too late. Chris is already, he does it every show. It's just his thing. I think he's got some kind of sheep fetish. So, yes, talking of the Slack channel, we'd love to have you join us. It's a lovely little community, and we kind of hang out and have fun together. And, it's really pleasant. And, you know, I've heard people go, oh, it's only for freelancers and agencies. Absolutely not. We have lots of in-house people here. I've heard other people go, oh, it seems to be a lot of developer talk. Yes, there is a lot of developer talk. I try my best to discourage it because I don't understand anything they say. We need more designers and UX people in the room to actually counteract that pointless code vomiting that goes on all the time in there. But if you fancy joining us, go to boagworld.com/Slack. I've now kicked it off with developers in the room. Andrew, you're not a developer. He's just a stirrer.
That's what he is.
He's a manager. That's what he is. He's just a manager.
Dream on. Right. Yeah, that's right. We'll call him Andrew Manager Miller from now on. He'll love that.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. No.
You should create a new little sub channel within the Slack channel called,
just for managers.
Well, I was thinking for developers, but you know, tuck them away. Yeah. Well,
they're not too bad, to be honest. They do take, you know, take it into threads. A lot of the developer stuff disappears into threads. So they haven't been too bad recently, actually. I love our Slack channel. It's the best thing.
It
really
is. It's very good.
Anyway, that about wraps it up for this week's show. Lovely to see you all again. Just a reminder that if you want to join us on one of the upcoming episodes, you can go to subscribe.boagworld.com/community. But until next week, goodbye. Bye.